I've got another confession to make. I'm your fool. Everyone's got their chains to break.
Florida beats Tampa Bay in a postseason series for the first time ever. And they do so in a gentleman's sweep in five games.
Both times they beat us, obviously you wanna beat them, you wanna get over that hump, and like, big respect to them. They've been unbelievable past years, and making the finals and winning the cups, and there's a lot to learn from from that team and organization. So it definitely feels great now to be able to beat them.
I'd have to get used to hearing that voice for a while. Barkov with two incredibly important goals in eliminating the Tampa Bay Lightning last night. Welcome back, Melnick in the afternoon, along with Andy Bennett and John Still. Mitch Melnick with you until 6. Has much gone down since we last spoke with Mike Johnson last Thursday? Let's find out. How you doing?
I am doing very well. I'll tell you what, Barkov, for a big, strong, physical player, got a quiet voice. Got to get used to that voice, because you're right. I think we probably will hear it for about, I think, probably 6 more weeks. I think there will be in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
Is that okay? I just need to ask this. Is that an expression, a gentleman's sweep?
I never heard it before.
Okay.
It is an expression, but he got it wrong. A gentleman's sweep is where you lose the first game and then you take 4 straight.
Okay.
That's a gentleman's sweep. Like, other than that, it's just a 5-game series. Yeah, I think that was Steve Levy. I don't think that's the essence of a gentleman's sweep. Gentleman's sweep, yeah, you lose the first one, and then you take the next 4.
All right. What's your gut tell you about Stamkos?
I think that his loyalty and his love for Tampa is going to get used against him, and they are going to leverage the heck out of that next contract. Because you think about what he's done the last 3 years. He's got 130 goals, about 200 close to 300 points. And on the open market, even at his age, that would be worth a 3-year deal for $9 million a year, $8 or $9 million a year, easily. And I think they're going to say, we know you like it here. You don't want to go anywhere else. We can't pay that much, so we'll give you – it'll either be 3 years, it'll be way less at $5 million or something like that, or they'll give him a massive lifetime deal, like a 6-year, 7-year deal for – $3.5 million, and then maybe he retires and it goes away. Maybe he gets injured at the end, however that shakes out at the end. But I think that he will not get paid what he's worth. He will not get paid what he's earned, because the loyalty he has to that market, to that franchise, will win out. He's got kids now that are going to school and everything else. He's like the hospital endeavors. I think he stays unless he gets so turned off with his pride and his ego that he's like, I can't take a deal that small because I'm worth more. But I don't think he gets there. I think they figure it out. I think it'll just be a really long-term deal at a low number, or a shorter-term deal probably worth about half of what he'd get on the open market.
Okay. Except he already left money on the table the last time he did this, right?
Yes, he did. He did when he went, you know.
He was angry.
With Toronto. He met with the mayor and the president of these companies or whatever, and he said it wasn't for him. But it's even more now, Mitch. It's almost ironic that teams always ask for sort of loyalty and give of yourself to the organization and the city and the crest and all that. And then here's a guy who has, clearly, and he's, you know, the greatest player in the history of that franchise, bona fide first ballot Hall of Famer, and they're going to use that same loyalty that they want so much against him in a negotiation. I just don't think, I mean, I don't know, Mitch, what he's going to have. He's going to have $130 million in career earnings. So I'm not saying an extra million here or there is inconsequential. It's not. I think the only thing is not about money that would cause this to not work. It's about pride and ego. And if he feels like he's not being respected, it's not about the money, but he feels disrespected or, you know, not treated fairly, that could have an impact. But I think that's the only thing that could have him explore other options. And he explored other options in the prime of his career, and he wasn't interested in more money, more profile in Toronto then. You think at 34 or whatever he's going to be, at this point in his career, he's going to be interested in going to a different kind of market? Probably not.
Yeah, although You know, that pride is very, very strong. We know how upset he was at the beginning of the year, right? When he wasn't offered, it was clear he wasn't being offered anything. He made it quite clear he was not happy about it. He felt disrespected.
Any player, as good as he is, doesn't get to his point with having a very healthy competitive streak, ego, pride, and athletes love to feel, we're quick to feel disrespected, right? We latch onto anything that we can, like, sort of motivate ourselves with. And yes, so it's not a zero chance, but I just think in the end cooler heads will prevail. But Tampa's in a tricky spot, Mitch, because they're not yet at the point where they can give the Ovechkin, Crosby, it doesn't really matter what it does to our team kind of contract. We're just like, you're gonna get it and we'll just work around it. Tampa, with all those other guys still signed, they want to be good still. Like, they have Vasilevsky and Hedman and Kucherov and Point and Cirelli and Chernak and Sergachev all signed for multiple years going forward. So they don't want to just concede and throw their salary structure out of the window because an extra $5 or $6 million goes to Stamkos, as much as they appreciate him. It's a unique situation, and you wonder if Julien Brisebois, from the school of Steve Yzerman, can be that sort of cutthroat if he has to be.
Mike, don't you find, though, it's a bit like there's an extra layer of it that transcends hockey when it comes to Stamkos in that market? Like, I remember getting on the train in Tampa. It's like, he, like, is the person welcoming you to the city.
Yeah.
Like, they, like, leaned on him to be the face of hockey there. And it left such a bad taste in my mouth the way they treated him last time. And I know we're talking about millionaires, so, like, I'm not shedding any tears for him. But I just feel like he's kind of owed it. Like, I don't know. I'm bothered.
Yeah, you are. But and this is why, like, at times when you're going to be a GM, Andy, when you're running a team, like, you got to be cold hearted. Like, you're not wrong,
Andy.
And there's billboards and on the tram and on the radio and on the TV, there's Stammer and there's the Stamkos wing of the Children's Hospital. Like, yes, you absolutely want to reward that, but I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can. And still put your team in the best position to win a Stanley Cup again in the next 3 years.
Andy doesn't have the ruthless gene yet, Mike.
No.
Maybe in another decade or so she'll have it.
She can be in player development because she's, you know, got a kinder touch.
All right. How ruthless do you think Brad Treliving could be if this doesn't go well tonight, Mike? Like, there's so many questions I have for you in terms of the Leafs. I think the overarching one I've been waiting for is, this is a team that has committed so much money to four guys up front, and yet for the past three or four playoffs, we have spoken about the inability to score in the postseason, which is so strange to me. So, like, If you had to think of, like, an overarching theme, like, is it not being able to play the way you have to play come playoff time when everything's tightened up? Is it not having the right defenseman getting the pucks to the forwards to break out in transition? Like, I guess there's so many different things that go into it, but if there's one thing that stood out for you over the last couple of years for a Leafs team that is so good offensively and yet cannot score at the biggest, most crucial time of the year, it would be what?
I think they have gotten away from being, like, a skilled passing team, and they've gone more and more, especially in the back end, into physical, rugged crease clears, Joel Edmondsons, Ilya Lyubushkins, Jake McCabes, and they don't get anything easy. And in the course of a regular season, I think the fatigue, the lower quality of opponent, their players are talented enough that they can take the cycle game and still score a ton of goals. But in the playoffs, when they play better opponents and it's more physical and they're more prepared for them, Auston Matthews and Willie Nylander are physically talented enough to sort of work through that checking and get there. And I think, I don't know if you guys have picked up on it, but Mitch Marner right now is an absolute lightning rod of criticism and scrutiny and really intense pressure for the way he's performed so far, almost to the point where, by Toronto standards, by Montreal, by anyone's standards, it's almost unfair, the stuff people are saying about him and his family and the way he was raised and all this stuff that is unrelated to him maybe not having a game. But I just, you know, it's all the things. It's not any one thing. It's the defenseman. It's the temperament of maybe some of the players that is not as wired to thrive in a more combative and a more intense and physical environment. It's all of those things. And when you've committed as much as they have, and every year they lose, and every year lesson learned, we'll be better, we'll get better. And yet, what are they, in the last 7 years? I think they're fourth in the league in wins, and they've only won one playoff round. Like, it feels like it's a tipping point, finally. And we've heard changes have to come, and nope, they keep rolling it back. Yes, Kyle Dubas left, but I think this year, if they lose tonight, or they lose in game six, or even if they lose in game seven, it feels like there will be changes, and not just insignificant ones. Feels like coaches, maybe one of, not John Tavares, because you can't buy him out anyways, but likely Mitch Marner will be explored, maybe even Brendan Shea. Like, it will go right to the top, and changes of significance will actually happen.
Yeah, again, a reminder, Keith Pelley has just arrived as the new man in charge right in Toronto. He's not going to do nothing. And your point about defensemen is well taken. I think it's not bad to have those kind of defensemen at this time of year, but the problem this year and in previous recent seasons, none of them are high-end defensemen. There are no Shea Webbers playing that role.
Everybody is. Everyone's desperate for someone who can play big minutes, play physical, and pass, and skate, and break out. And what the Leafs have is a guy in Morgan Rielly who can really skate and really pass and really break out. But he's not a great defender, and he's not a physical player. And then they have Labushkin and Edmondson, who are physical and rugged, but they don't pass the puck well. And so, yes, they don't make mistakes, but every time the puck is on their stick and it just gets shoved up the boards, like, yes, it's not going in your own net, but it's not going in the other net either. And that becomes part of the issue. Now, that's why Shea Weber is Shea Weber, and Chris Pronger is Chris Pronger, and, you know, Cale Makar is, because they can do both. That's why they're the best in the league. It's hard to find defensemen that can both skate and pass as well as defend. And the Leafs will be, once again next summer, looking for someone to fit that description. Maybe it's Brandon Montour down in Florida. He's a pending UFA. We talked about Stamkos. Montour himself is a pending UFA. I think he'll get quite a bit of interest this summer.
There's another Canadian team sniping at each other. We heard Mark Scheifele talk about all the adjustments Colorado's made, and we haven't.
Yeah.
A direct slap at Rick Bonus, who today or yesterday said, listen, we have to make adjustments, but we also have to stop taking penalties and give the puck away. Colorado looks to be at another level. What are the ramifications in Winnipeg if they can't win three in a row?
I don't know if there are any, Mitch. I think the quality of opponent factors into it. I think the somewhat tempered expectations to begin the year for Winnipeg would factor into it. Maybe Rick Bonus, full disclosure, one of my favorite people in entire the hockey world. He's had some health issues himself. His wife, Judy, has had some health issues. He had to step away. Like, I wonder if they bow out. Does his time as a head coach change? Maybe because he just decides, I think he's 69 years old, that it's time to just step back. But here's the challenge for Winnipeg. You can talk about adjustments, and yes, and Colorado made some adjustments to where they put the pucks, how they forecheck, how they're sealing the walls, their puck retrievals, and it's worked really well. But what Colorado has in this series is the three best skaters, right? MacKinnon, Makar, and Rantanen are the three best players in the series. Taves and Morrissey are probably tied for fourth. What Winnipeg was supposed to have was by far the better goaltender. Yeah. And that hasn't played out this way. Now, that's partly because of the defense in front of him, but that's also probably because Connor Hellebuck, like he has in years past, has replicated a great regular season with an equally great playoff. And if you're not going to get better goaltending than Georgiev's going to give you, then you're in trouble, because Colorado's going to be able to outscore and generate all kinds of stuff, even against a really good defensive team. And unless Hellebuck can flip the script and be the better goalie, then Winnipeg, they may win tonight, but they can't run off three in a row against the way Colorado's playing right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a critical thing. It's not going to be a disastrous thing if they lose to Colorado. The thing that's so impressive about Winnipeg and what Kevin Cheveldayoff does is the way that they just keep bringing in really high-end prospects in Lambert and McGroarty and things like that. But how about putting a lot of pressure on a guy that has had, I don't want to say a tumultuous relationship with the coach, but let's just say Cole Perfetti has not been Rick Bonus's cup of tea throughout the season. And then here you go, kid. It's game five. We need you. We need offense. I mean, what's the pressure on him tonight? And just like, do you think that not necessarily can he be the difference, but can he make his mark this evening against an Avalanche team that, you know, is just better than Winnipeg?
So I look at it as a little bit differently. Yes, there's pressure, of course, stepping into a really, you know, a must-win situation. I think he absolutely can. He had 19 goals playing a limited role and sort of in and out of the coach's good books throughout the year. So I think he absolutely can. In a game that will probably be going up and down the ice, he'll be fine. But if I'm Perfetti, I'm thinking, okay, listen, where's my downside here? If I don't score, that's okay. Nobody else could score, and I'm playing like I haven't played all series. But where's my upside? If I play and do well, then I feel great, and I can give a big forget you to the coaching staff who elected not to play me and show everyone that they were wrong, I was right, I should have been in the lineup. Like, I'm thinking if you're him, it's nothing but upside, because if he does well, he can sort of stick it to everyone, including the coaches, who didn't think that maybe he belonged in this series to start. So, and I expect him to be good. He's a talented player, and he's a pretty resilient guy. We've already seen it at times this year. Seems like every time he gets scratched, he comes back and plays well and produces points. So it would not surprise me one bit if he gets on the scoreboard tonight.
When are you heading to Prague?
I am going a week today, so I will talk to you next Tuesday from the airport prior to boarding the plane to Prague.
All right, looking forward to that. And when do we get the announcement of who's on the team?
You tell me, because I do like to prepare just a little bit. I got the coaching staff. I got the management team. I've heard rumblings of players, but I got nothing. I mean, the American teams have named 15, 16 players, and they're going to be as talented a U.S. team as maybe there has ever been at the World Championship, which is great. And so I'm expecting a pretty good roster for Canada, presumably, we'll hear about in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't really matter who's going for Canada, because Bill Guerin's threat to his American players have just brought everybody up. They're an absolutely stacked team going there.
Jeff Petrie, the latest to jump on board. So Petrie and Caulfield together again. Mike, thank you so much for this. Enjoy all the games tonight, four elimination games tonight, and we'll talk.
I remember 4 years ago, led by Connor Brown and Nick Paul, won a gold medal. So you never know until you get over there, but we should know soon enough.
Well, that's John Still for you right there. It's already over for Canada.
Yes. Self-loathing Canadian, John Still. That's what we should call me, sure.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
As the clock was winding down, were you thinking about sort of the uncertainty of what's now to come with you?
No. That never crossed my mind. So I'm out there battling to try to help our team win. Regardless, at the end of the game, we're trying to score, and you know, there's some pride on the line for our group, and
Aaron Ward coming up next.